To most of us, Native America is an unknown world, shrouded in myth and misconception. To the extent we think of it at all, we imagine a world of drunks, welfare cheats, and casino millionaires, or conversely, elders possessed of deep, mystical earth wisdom. What we don't see are people who predate us here on this continent and who, in their many ways and many centuries of life here, have evolved a way of understanding and interacting with the land that is at once distinctly different from the Euro-American way and rich with a knowledge of its own. For almost three decades, I have lived and worked among these people. What those years have shown me is that there is something fundamental in the Native way of seeing and living that has much to teach us all. It is something about being human, about living humbly on the earth. Always teach by stories, an elder told me. People learn best by stories, because stories lodge deep in the heart. Let us begin, then, with a story you should know, but may not have heard. It is the story of how the Native people see the world they now live in and how it came to be. So opens Voices in the Stones, Life Lessons from the Native Way by Kurt Nurban, author of Neither Wolf Nor Dog. And so this people, these cultures who far, far predate the European and other peoples who arrived in this land by whatever means and for whatever reasons after 1492, these Native American peoples still have a vibrant philosophy, a vibrant religious fabric that is not only kept alive, but continues to help its believers come to understand the world around them. It is a different world that is understood from those of us who live awash in traditional Western culture. Again and again, we're told and shown in stories and in through myths that Native American religious belief and action sees the very world we all inhabit in a different way and responds to it in a much more holistic and communal manner. The author, as he tells us, entered this world where humankind is a part of nature, not distinct from it, a world he entered as a young man determined to bring education and enlightenment to the remote Native American community he was hired to teach. As so often happens to those with an open mind and spirit, the Native American community into which he entered so naively taught him as much as he ever taught it of the Western world in which he grew up. As he writes at one point in the book, "In the world where I was raised, life has only a brief moment of flowering, the time of physical strength for men, the season of youthful beauty and childbearing for women. All else is a time of becoming or a time of decline." Rather than looking at our lives like the seasons, where each has a richness that belongs to no other, we look at them like a flower that moves from bud to bloom to gradual decay and death. Only the time of the bloom is seen as the fullness of life. Native people, like my friend Joe, do not see life this way. They see it as a passage through spiritual seasons, where we gain knowledge and richness as we pass from one season to the next. Only a person in winter has seen them all, so only a person in winter is granted the respect that comes with full spiritual knowledge. Far from being vestigial or an eclipse, the elders who have lived through all of life's seasons are the honored ones, the crown jewels of the Native family. At powwows, they are given a place of honor. Before any speech or presentation, their presence is always acknowledged. More than once, when I asked a student to do something with me or to perform a particular task, the student responded, quote, "I have to ask my grandma," end quote. I was reminded of one encounter that I had in our small town 30 miles south of the reservation. It was only a small moment, but it spoke volumes about the significance of the elders to the Native people. My stepson had ridden to town on his bicycle. He was young, no more than 10, and struggled to make friends. On this Saturday morning, he'd left early, hoping to meet someone from school or to find something to fill his life with a bit of childhood adventure. So, when, after only an hour, he appeared at the door with a gloomy look on his face, I knew something bad had happened. "What's wrong?" I asked. He looked at me with a dark expression. "Some Indian kid stole my bike," he said. Our town, though surrounded on three sides by large reservations, was a bastion of white small-town culture, built on its heritage as a lumber center in the early 20th century. There were many Native families, and though we all brushed shoulders, our interaction was superficial. The towns in the nearby reservation, small and ragged though they were their towns, and this was our town, the white town. The native folks stayed mostly in the background and kept to themselves. My stepson's encounter was in no way out of the ordinary, to be sure. It had a racial component to it, but mostly it was just the typical rough-and-tumble interaction of preteen boys. Still, one of the boys had stolen his bike. I needed to get involved. So we got in the car and drove to the scene of the theft. Three or four young native boys were riding around on dirt bikes. One of them was riding my stepson's bike. "There he is," my stepson said, pointing to a floppy-haired boy maybe 11 or 12 years old. I approached the boy in a stern but friendly manner. I did not want to make a scene, but merely wanted to assert my adult authority to bring the issue to a quick and simple resolution. "Is that your bike?" I asked. The boy looked up at me with a defiant scowl. He gripped his hands tighter on the handlebars, as if to show me that he was not about to surrender this prize that he had captured. I decided to try a more conciliatory approach. "You know, taking something that doesn't belong to you isn't a good thing," I said. Still, the boy said nothing. His back stiffened and his jaw tightened. He was not going to give an easy inch to this white man. I decided to take a different tack and appeal to his sense of empathy. "How would you feel if someone bigger than you took your bike?" I asked. Still, no response. Then, remembering my friend Joe and the lessons of the reservation, I took a deep breath, looked the boy straight in the eye, and asked very softly, "Who's your grandmother?" Instantly, all the defiance melted away. Without saying a word, he got off the bike and pushed it toward me. His eyes were cast down and his manner was contrite. The mere threat of his grandmother's involvement had struck more fear into his heart than all the words, all the moralizing, and all the implied threat of the looming presence of a large adult standing before him. "Hey, it's okay," I said. "Just don't do it again, and don't take things that don't belong to you." He nodded, wide-eyed, and backed up to the safety of his friends. He stood quietly as we put the bike in the car and drove away. How unlikely such an encounter would have been in the world where I was raised. Invoking the grandmother in a confrontation would have been seen as strange, even crazy, but not in the native world. In the native world, the elders are respected and honored. They are linked with the past, the expectations of the best that has gone before. And though they may have little physical power, they have the power of true authority. Well, in succeeding chapters, our author takes us on a journey to visit with the Native American experience. In chapters titled The Native Way of Living, The Native Way of Believing, The Native Way of Dying, The Native Way of Knowing. Nurburn writes to us about the elderly folks in our society, as you just heard, and about the importance of giving responsibility and respect to the young, for both the old and the young are closer to the Great Spirit. And goes on to write to us about what we might learn from the Native American experience of the natural world around us, the importance of the words we use, and by using them, come to incorporate them into our lives and into our thoughts. He concludes this quiet reverie with a glimpse of the possible future, but in a way that is optimistic, not cautionary. As he writes, "We Americans are a people of optimism and possibility and do not respond well to cautions and talks of limitations. But the world exists independent of our understanding of it. It was here before we came into existence. It will be here long after we are gone. It operates by rules far different from ours and answers to forces beyond our understanding and control. I am reminded of the words of the elder who said, nature has rules. Nature has laws. You think you can ignore the rules, or if you don't like them, you can change them. But Mother Earth doesn't change the rules. When you can count the animals, you're getting near the end of your chances. We can count the eagles. We can count the buffalo. I've heard that in India and Africa they can count the tigers and the elephants. That's Mother Earth crying out. She's giving us a warning, and she's begging for her life. And here's what your people don't ever seem to learn. There's going to come a day when things can't be fixed. And you know what? It's going to be a day just like today. We want to leave this a better place, a more hopeful place, a more caring and humane place for our children and all the children who follow. I firmly believe, our author tells us, that the native people have something to teach us in this regard. If we look past the dysfunction born of the cultural devastation that has been visited upon them, look beyond the guilt that has blinded us and the mythologies we have fostered, if we see past their small numbers and our tendency to dismiss them as just another minority group, we may yet come to realize that they are not a vanquished culture. They are our elder culture, and they have unique gifts to offer as the original children of this land. And so Nurburn writes with the understanding of a longtime teacher, presenting his thoughts in deceptively simple sentences, and uses real-life examples from his life living with the people about whom he writes. Here are the teenagers he teaches, the grandmothers he learns to respect, the men of his own age from whom he learns to respect this new life in which he lives. It's a first-person narrative, and it works. Is Nurburn too thoughty at times? Is he too wrapped up in the beauty of the Native American way? Does he pick and choose a bit too preciously from many Native American luminaries, giving us snippets of their long-developed philosophies as little nuggets of truth, little thought pieces that are so popular with the West? Probably. And yet, A Spirit in the Stone begs the question, is the Native American way, as it is presented by Nurburn, better than Western culture? Is it worse? Is it naive? Is it deeply nuanced? I'll leave you to decide that, dear reader. What I will say is that today's book offers us, as readers, the opportunity to delve into this worldview through the pen of an experienced writer who has lived immersed in the world of words he uses, has lived the life he writes about, giving him a credence that others studying the topic from afar don't quite have. Let's allow Kent Nurburn the last word in this book review, Voices in the Stones, as he writes, "I should emphasize that not all Native cultures are the same, any more than all European nations are the same. I think that the values I have tried to bring forth are common throughout North America. They're reflected in different ways. Pan-Indianism is a danger whenever speaking of Native American, though time, cultural interpretation, and the melting pot of the boarding school experience have all served to bring the many Native peoples closer to the modern world. The roots of their individual beliefs and cultures are unique and personal. What is unequivocally universal is their belief that spirit permeates all of creation. And this has been my core conviction in trying to show you the ways that Native America has influenced my life and thought. I hope you find these ways meaningful for your own life as well." Voices in the Stones, Life Lessons from the Native Way by Kent Nurburn. It's available at any of our fine local libraries, including the West Lafayette Public Library.